It is good to be with you today. My name is Matt Denske. I'm the student ministry pastor here at Fellowship Greenville. And I'm just rejoicing. I'm grateful. I'm thankful to be in here with you. Welcome to Fellowship. We love that you're here. We love that you've chosen to worship with us today. We believe that there is a God who loves you and has a place for you to belong. We think it could even be in our church body, our church family. So thank you for being here this morning. If you've been here over the past few weeks or months, then you know that we've been going through the Gospel of John. We've been going through John's writings in his Gospel, verse by verse, book by book. Today's no different. We'll be in John chapter 10. If you want to go ahead, you can just put a thumb there or a finger there in your Bible, John chapter 10. You can flip there. If you have a digital Bible, you just boop, 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 just go there on your app, something like that. And today's passage is about Jesus being the Good Shepherd, which is really, in my opinion, one of the most beautifully descriptive passages that Jesus offers to us within the entirety of his teaching about who he is. I mean, it's just so rich and full of language and some poetic, beautiful, intricate language. And so on one hand, it's this amazing passage. On the other, it might be also one of the most familiar passages about Jesus being the Good Shepherd, John chapter 10. And so if this morning you've come in and you've heard this passage like a dozen times in your life, then I just want to encourage all of us to maybe approach it with as fresh eyes as we can possibly have this morning. Even though we're familiar, I still believe Jesus wants to speak. And one of the things I've been wrestling with this week in this passage is, okay, yes, this is a familiar passage, but I've been convicted this week because I keep coming back to some of the simplicities of who Jesus is, that even though I'm familiar with them, I have not been applying them to my heart or to my life in ways that I ought to be on a daily basis. So no matter how familiar we are with this passage, let's come in with open hearts, open hands, and maybe even just walk through things we already know, but maybe reapply them to our hearts this morning. John 10, that's where we're going to be. A few months ago, back in September, I was up in Canada. I was in the western part of Canada. I was in Alberta, in a very remote area, miles, miles, miles away from anything. I was hiking in the Rocky Mountains there, and I flew up with the group, and the organization up there assigned me a guide for the week. We were there for 9 days. They assigned me a guide, and mainly because I don't know the area, I don't know what I'm doing up there, I don't know the mountains, and this was like real remote, real primitive. There's no hiking trails of any kind. There was no map, not even like a topography map. There's just nothing. So we're just up there and fully leaning into the guides and their mental map of the area. And it was amazing to hear them talk because they had nicknames for everything, a nickname for that mountain, for that tree stump, for that big rock. Like they just knew this area up there in Alberta. But I didn't. And so you just are with this guide. And they gave me the youngest guide they had in the organization. Probably because I was the youngest of the group that was there, I was the youngest. And I think they figured, oh, you're young and he's young. You guys will hit it off. But also because you're young, I'm sure you have tons of energy and you'll be able to keep up with this guy. And they could not have been further from the truth. I have two boys and a little girl on the way. Dude, I'm dying. What are you talking about? I have no energy. And this guy, this guide they gave me, honestly, I think God blessed him to not feel physical pain or fatigue. He's like a young stag or a gazelle, just like leaping his way through. This dude is just stamina through the roof. And I'm just like huffing and puffing, trying to acclimatize to the altitude and all sorts of stuff. And I would consider myself a pretty seasoned, you know, outdoorsman. I've been backpacking forever. I love backpacking, camping, hiking, climbing, anything like that. I love it. I've led multiple trips, and so I have a lot of experience, but not so much in the Rockies. That was only my third excursion ever to the Rockies, and it's a different ballgame. And so usually our routine was we'd go out for a day, we'd spend the night somewhere, we'd pitch a tent, spend the night, and then the next day we'd stay out and wait till sunset, and then we'd hike out in the dark, we'd find our vehicle, we would leave it on the side of a road somewhere, and then we'd drive miles, miles, miles back to base camp. We'd spend a night in base camp, have a good meal, sit out the next morning for a 2-day and 1-night venture. So 2 days, 1 night, 2 days, 1 night. And it was towards the end of the week, and we were in one of these. We had hiked to this mountain. We were on top and we were kind of exploring it all day. And man, this guide, he was just notorious. We would get to the top of a mountain and we would just be up there having bushwhacked the whole thing. Remember, no trails, just real like out there. Bushwhacked the whole thing. We'd be on top and he would see another mountain like miles away in the distance. We'd have to cross like a valley with molten lava rivers and all sorts of stuff. That part's a joke. But then he would look at it and be like, hey man, do you feel like climbing that? And like, not really. All right, come on, we can do it. I'm like, huh? I mean, this guy just, he just wanted to go. And so this day, we had hiked all day. We had set up our camps, spent the night, and then the next day we hiked all day, and it's nearing sundown, and so we're gearing up to head out. That day, from the top of the mountains, we had scoped it all out. We could see for miles from the top. And we knew that somewhere our car was south. We couldn't see it. We couldn't even see the road. There was this thicket of trees and forest, but we could see from the top of the mountain. We know our road is south. So once we head down this mountain, we actually spotted this horse trail. All right, let's pick up this horse trail way down there. And once we get there, we can follow that. And we just traced it from the top. We could see the whole scope and perspective of it. All right, if we go here, all right, we're gonna hit a thicket of trees there. But once we get through that, there's a dry creek bed. I mean, we could see the whole thing from the top. That night, as sun was setting, we began our descent. We went down the mountain. And close to dark, we did. We picked up the horse trail. So everything was going as planned. But then these storm clouds started to come in, and they were pretty ominous, and they were pretty dark, and you could just kind of see them and sense the front that was coming in with them. The temperature dropped pretty quickly. All of a sudden, it started spinning some rain. Nothing like a downpour, but it was giving you the signs that, hey, if you don't get out of here soon, this is going to be bad. The winds started to pick up, and at first, it was just some gusts, but then all of a sudden, I mean, it was one of those windstorms, like it's throwing you off balance as you're walking. You're really having to kind of reorient your body weight as you go, and so it becomes kind of violent pretty quickly, and all of a sudden, I'm looking around like, man, I've been caught in enough storms to know this is going to be bad, and especially at nighttime, and especially if I have no clue where we're at, right? So we begin to pick up the pace a little bit, and I'm watching like all the weather change, and the wind becomes more and more violent, and then all of a sudden, I mean, you're just starting to hear the trees, and they're starting to creak and moan, and right? Like they're just blowing all above you and it's just dark. This blanket of darkness comes once the sun's gone and it's still spinning water and wind and you've got a little flashlight on and you're kind of looking around, but all you can really see is about 10 feet in front of you and you're just wondering like what's beyond the dark, right? Like my brain started to play tricks on me and I'm not going to lie to you guys. In this moment, these circumstances began to combine, and if I'm honest, I began to get a little afraid. I have no problems admitting this. I'm in the remote wilderness of Canada. My whole life pretty much depends on this guy that I really barely know, right? Like, who's to say he's not leading me somewhere to bury me, right? Like, I'm trusting him. He's got the mental map. I've got nothing, right? Like, I'm trusting that this guy knows where he's going. But as the weather started to get worse, I started to get a little bit more panicked because I hate the feeling of not knowing where I'm at. I don't like not being oriented to the things around me and fully leaning on this guy. It was a little uncomfortable for me. I just didn't like not feeling competent whatsoever about where we're going or what we're doing. And then all of a sudden, these thoughts began to come in my mind about like, because the whole week, we had been seeing heavy, big grizzly bear tracks all around us. We had been seeing carcasses of animals that the grizzlies would kind of go into and then leave behind to rot. We'd found cougar tracks everywhere. At nights when we'd pitch our tent, packs of wolves would be howling back. And I mean, the whole week, it was just like, hey, apex predators are all around you, right? And it's like, ah, terrifying. And so as we're hiking out, my little flashlight, like poking through the darkness, I'm like, dude, what is around us right now, right? Like you, I'm just waiting on these little glowy eyes to be like staring back at me from the woods. And so I start to get these thoughts in my mind, like, man, I bet there's a predator stalking us right now. And of course, the whole week, he's told me a bajillion stories about experiences of bumping into stuff or when he was stalked or a guide or someone that he brought out there that got mauled by a cougar. And you know, that's a joke. But he's like telling me all this stuff. And I'm like, dude, please stop telling me that. So now my brain's going about, what's in the darkness that I can't see? And what's this weather gonna do? And where are we? And how much further is it? And I just started to get those gut feelings of panic. And then all of a sudden the trail would just end. And we'd be standing there at the dead end like, well, where do we go now? And it would kind of be like, well, if we kind of walk through this thicket of trees, I think we might pick it back. What do you mean might? What are you talking about might? I don't know. It's been a few years since I've been in this. Then why'd you bring me, right? Like, it's just this panicky feeling. And man, I just resolved in that moment, I'm just going to stick as close to my guide as I possibly can, because what other hope is there? I started thinking about what would happen if he got seriously hurt. Not just, all right, let's hunker down for the night hurt, but like, I need to evac him hurt. I don't know where we're going. All these thoughts came in my head. I just resolved, I'm going to stick with my guide. I will not let his boots out of my sight. I'm going to stay right behind him. Remember, he's like the young spry, like, whoo, whoo, like, let's go. And I'm like, like, I'm resolved. I will stick with my guide. And then occasionally he would turn around and ask how I was doing, right? I'm exhausted, but as a man, you can't show that. So I was just like, I'm good, dude. I'm good, right? Like, no, he'd turn around and in his thick Canadian accent, oh, hey, how you doing there, bud? I'm like, great, bud, how are you? He's like, yeah, I know we're hoofing this trail, but man, I think we're going the right way. I'm like, all right, well, I'm just with you, man. I clung to my guide, wholly trusting in him. And then I found myself beginning to derive my confidence and my comfort from his presence. Not on the circumstances, but on him. It was really, really interesting, because I would watch his body language. Is he confused? Is he panicked? Does he seem worried? The tone of his voice, what does it sound like? I began to, instead of wishing like, oh, I wish the storm would stop, I just began to say, you know what? He's got me. He's got this figured out. I'll derive my comfort and my confidence from his presence. And if we're really, really honest, I think oftentimes life can be like this storm. I mean, there are times in life where from the top of the mountain, when it was calm and clear and warm, you kind of surveyed the landscape of life. You had it figured out. You felt confident. You felt good. You had a little plan in place, boxes checked. You were feeling really strong about it all. But then you actually started to get down in there into the thick of it, and things just went wrong. Variables changed, unpredictables happened, darkness fell in, a storm came, and now all of a sudden you are navigating what was once a pretty good plan, and now you just feel hopeless and helpless and lost. And you're wondering, man, how did we get here? Like, when did this happen? How did I lose control so quickly? And then you're wondering about what's out there that I can't even see, like what's beyond the darkness, because there's things coming at me, man. I feel them, I know them. You start worrying about all the what ifs. You start making all the hypotheticals your reality, and fear begins to set in. This is life. There are seasons of life like this, where we go through storms and unpredictables and afraids and what ifs. And in those moments, where do we turn to find our comfort or our confidence? Whose presence do we lean on? Or what thing do we lean on? Or if you've been through the storm so many times in life, you're just kind of wondering, will anyone ever guide me out of this? Can anything ever work to bring me out of this? Where do you turn in the storms of your life, when you're terrified and afraid and uncomfortable and feel hopeless a little bit? Do you lean into a guide? Do you even have the guide? Jesus in John chapter 10, I think, speaks to this very scenario that goes on with our souls. He speaks to this idea about navigating our way through life and his presence in the midst of our fear in John chapter 10. So that's where we're going to be this morning. We're actually going to start in John chapter 9. Last week, Jim Thompson preached a sermon. If you missed it, if you weren't here, please go and listen to it. It's online. He preached a sermon about pain and why God allows pain, how God uses our pain, what God is doing in the midst of pain and confusion and suffering. Jim shared a very personal story about he and his wife. It was beautiful. His vulnerability was contagious and moving. I encourage you to go listen to it. But he taught through John chapter 9, and we're going to pick up at the very tail end of that. Because John chapter 9 and John chapter 10, while there's a chapter break in your Bibles, there's not a chapter break in John's mind. He's writing seamlessly, and so John 9 flows immediately into John 10. Jesus, you know, it's not one of those passages that ends and then like months later it picks up. This is a seamless transition. Jesus is talking and begins talking, and that's what John 10 is. So we're actually going to pick up at the tail end of John 9. Long story short, there was a blind man. He was born blind physically. Jesus heals him, and he can immediately see, but then slowly he begins to believe in Jesus. That wasn't immediate. It happened multiple times. In fact, we get about four interactions with that blind man in the passage, and by the fourth, he is worshiping Jesus, and he believes in him. That's verse 38. Of chapter 9. Now, when the blind man worships Jesus and believes in Jesus, Jesus has an interesting response to him. Jesus says, "For judgment, I have come into this world that those who don't see will see, and those who see may become blind." So, this is an odd statement. He's using a reversal statement. Jesus does this. He's a wordsmith. He's a master of phraseology and words, and he's doing this to provoke thought. Well, what are you talking about? You've come into the world so that people who can see can't see now, and that those who can't see would be able to see? And he's not talking about physical blindness at this point, even though John 9 was about a physically blind man. That would be kind of weird. If Jesus made the claim, "I've come into the world to blind everyone who has sight. I don't like people who can see." Like, that's not what he's saying. He's talking about the deeper sight, spiritual vision. He's talking about people who think they understand, people who have knowledge about God and claim to be wise and think they can see and they've got it figured out. Jesus says, "I've come to help them understand. They actually don't see, and those who don't see will be able to see. They'll know who I am." He's talking about the religious leaders of his day. Because they claimed knowledge. They took pride in their positions of power. They manipulated people. They put burdens on people. They were all about the rules, check the boxes. The whole concept of relationship with God was not really on their radar. And they themselves couldn't even obey the rules. And yet they claimed piety and righteousness. And Jesus comes and says, "I've come so that you can see. You do not have it figured out. And those who can't see will see." And there's some Pharisees nearby when Jesus says this, verse 40. And some of the Pharisees near him heard him say these things and kind of in shock, and they ask him, "Are we also blind?" But the nature of their question is kind of like, "You're not saying that we're blind too, are you?" I mean, you can hear that confidence or the arrogance maybe in their knowledge. "Surely you're not saying we're blind because we're Pharisees." Jesus says to them, "If you were blind, you'd have no guilt. But now that you say we see, your guilt remains." So Jesus is saying to them, "Yeah, I'm saying you're blind too." Because the Pharisees claimed, "Not, we've got it figured out. We've got knowledge." Remember Nicodemus in John chapter 3? Jesus is trying to talk to Nicodemus, and he's trying to talk to him about very simple earthly things. And Nicodemus is not figuring out, and Jesus says, "Nicodemus, you're a teacher of the law. You're a Pharisee. You're supposed to be the one who knows these things. If you don't even understand earthly concepts, how would you ever understand heavenly concepts?" Nicodemus did not have it figured out. He didn't see. The Pharisees claimed, "Because of our knowledge, we see." Jesus came to show them, "You're actually blind. You've taken pride in what you know, but there's no application to your heart. You're graceless, you're judgmental, and you're a burden to the people around you," these religious leaders of the day. And those are some good heart checks for people who work in the church world today. Those are good heart checks. Man, do I take pride in my knowledge? Do I think I have it figured out? Have I become arrogant? Do I wholly lean on Jesus, or do I stand on my own two feet? Those are great heart checks. But he's come to disrupt a lot of the Pharisees' stronghold in that culture. And that's why they didn't like him. In fact, they plotted his murder regularly, and eventually they would succeed. They did not like Jesus. He ruffled their feathers. He disrupted the status quo. He challenged their positions, and they didn't like him. So coming off of that idea, "I am saying you're blind, Pharisees," Jesus then begins John chapter 10. He tells this story. He tells a metaphor, a parable. He says this, John 10, verse 1. Jesus says, "Truly, truly, I say to you, he who does not enter the sheepfold by the door, but climbs in by another way, a man is a thief and a robber. But he who enters by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him the gatekeeper opens, and the sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name, and he leads them out. When he has brought out all of his own, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. A stranger they will not follow, but they will flee from him, for they do not know the voice of strangers." Verse 6, this figure of speech, this metaphor, this parable, Jesus used with them, the crowd, the Jews, and the Pharisees, used with them, but they did not understand what he was saying to them, which is ironic because the whole claim is, yeah, we get it, we see, we understand. Jesus is like, all right, well, here's a story. We don't get it. So Jesus tells this story. As we navigate John 10 today, the one word I want us to just tuck in our minds is the idea of closeness, proximity, closeness, because that is what Jesus is going to keep going back to, this idea of intimacy, of closeness. But he begins John 10 by telling a metaphor. Nowhere in verses 1 through 6 does Jesus prescribe himself in there. He doesn't say yet, he doesn't say, yeah, I'm part of this story. Now he will, in verse 11, say, I'm the good shepherd. So I think we can apply these truths to Jesus. But so far, it's simply a metaphor. It's simply a parable. He tells this story. Now, shepherding in that day, in that culture, had two primary areas. One was the pasture, where you lead the sheep to feed and to drink, to lay down, to sleep. And one was the pen, where you hold the sheep, you store them, you keep them safe and protected. And so oftentimes, shepherds would bring their flocks of sheep into a village for a night. Maybe they needed maybe the shepherds needed a good night's sleep and a good bed, a warm meal or something like that. They've been sleeping out in the countryside for a while. So they would bring their sheep into a village and put them in a pen. And oftentimes this would be a communal pen. Multiple shepherds would share this pen. And so all the sheep would be mixed up together. Jesus says, only the shepherd comes in through the front door. That's what he says. He comes in through the front door and the gatekeeper recognizes him, because a shepherd, your sheep are your livestock, that's your whole world. You're not just gonna leave them in a pen unattended and unguarded all night for who knows what to happen. So you would hire a gatekeeper, someone to watch them. And the gatekeeper would know who you are because you dropped the sheep off. Maybe you even hired the gatekeeper. And Jesus is saying, I've come through the front door. He who enters by the door is the shepherd of the sheep, and the sheep know him. The gatekeeper opens to him. Whoever doesn't enter through the front door, but climbs in another way, that man is a thief and a robber. Jesus, I believe, is trying to help the Pharisees see and understand, you have claimed to be the shepherds of God's people, but you haven't come in through the front door. You've made your way from some other. You're sneaky. You've come over the back wall. You claim to be among the sheep, but you're not. You rest more on your positions and your power and your knowledge. The gatekeeper wouldn't even recognize you. I mean, he's using some very strong figurative language if they were able to discern what he's saying. Of course, we know in verse 6, they're like, we don't know what you're saying. But Jesus is trying to help them understand, I've come in through the front. I belong here. I'm the shepherd of these sheep. You guys have found some other way in. They don't even know you. They don't even follow you, but they'd follow me. So remember our word, closeness, proximity. Jesus begins to describe the relationship between a shepherd and his sheep. And in this whole passage, Jesus is assigning us as God's people to be the sheep. And he's the shepherd. I don't know how you feel about being called a sheep, but that's what Jesus is doing in this passage. God's people are the sheep of God's flock, and he is the shepherd. And this is what Jesus says about the shepherd. Verse 3, the sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name. Do you know that Jesus knows your name? I know it's so easy to sometimes feel distant from God and like, God, where are you? Man, I'm going through this valley. I'm in this storm. Where are you at? I want us to be reminded, Jesus knows our name. He calls us by name. One day we will hear him call us by name. In fact, we get a foreshadowing of this in the very next chapter, John chapter 11, when his friend Lazarus is dead and Jesus calls him by name out of death, brings him back from death. Lazarus, come out. It's a foreshadowing, calling us by name. Do you know that the work of Jesus is not done? He's ascended into heaven, but the author of Hebrews tells us that Jesus sits at the right hand of God the Father and prays for us to the ear of the Father. Do you know that this very morning, even though it's daylight savings, Jesus got up early on your behalf to pray. He doesn't sleep. That's a joke. Come on, lighten up. To pray for you. The author of Hebrews says, Jesus intercedes for us. Your name is coming off the lips of Jesus into the ear of the Father. He knows his sheep by name. The shepherd is able to walk into a flock, even of a communal pen where other shepherds have put their sheep, and he's able to identify his own and call them by name. He recognizes his sheep, and he leads them out because they hear his voice and they trust him. They know his voice. They know what he sounds like. He's given them names. He calls them out and they follow. And once he's brought out all his own, he goes before them and the sheep follow him, which this is an amazing imagery. Jesus is saying, like, I bring the sheep out, but I don't stand in the back and drive the flock forward. That's kind of Western style shepherding. I don't drive the flock forward to ascend a hill, not knowing what's on the other side, what dangers lurk ahead. No, no, no. I'm going to go before all my sheep. I'm going not just to bring you out, but to lead you out. I go before the sheep. I'll face danger first. I know where to bring you. I have the mental map in my head. Listen to my voice. I'm bringing you forward. Jesus says, the good shepherd, one of the main things that a good shepherd does for his sheep is he guides us. He guides us. You've been walking through life lately and you feel like you're in a storm. And you just feel like, dude, I don't know where to go anymore. I don't know where to turn. I don't know who to talk to. I don't know what to do. I haven't felt God in so long. I wouldn't even know what to say if I tried to pray. My marriage has fallen apart. I evaluated my parenting the other day, and it's awful, and my kids are making decisions, and maybe that's a reflection on me, or I'm about to lose my job, or I'm afraid that I... Whatever you're going through, Jesus says, man, I'm the shepherd, and I know you, and I know your name, and I know what you sound like, and I know what you look like. Listen to my voice. I'll go before you. I'll guide you out, Jesus says. Good shepherd guides. The crowd here does not know what he's talking about. They're like, what? And so Jesus goes on, verse 7, to try to help explain. So Jesus again says to them, truly, truly, I say to you, I'm the door. And then you read this and you're like, wait, what? Because at least for me, the natural sequence of thought or the train of thought would be, Jesus uses this metaphor about a shepherd leading his sheep. They don't understand it. I would think Jesus would go right to the shepherd. I'm the good shepherd. Let me break it down for you. I'm the shepherd I'm talking about in this parable. But he doesn't do that. He throws in this other description. He says, hey, all right, let me help you understand. I'm the door. Like, wait, you're the what? Yeah, I'm the door. It's a weird nickname, bro. What up, door? Like, it's just a strange... He says, I'm the door of the sheep. All who came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not listen to them. I'm the door. If anyone enters by me, he will be saved and will go in and out and find pasture. So again, Jesus is talking about shepherding. The two main areas to shepherd were the pasture and the pen. Jesus is now beginning to transition from the pen idea to the pasture. But when a shepherd would lead his sheep out of a village and take them into the mountainside or into the hills, to the pastures, there would be more primitive pens out there. You're not just gonna let the sheep wander around all night. There would be these primitive pens that the shepherds would make. And sometimes they would be circles of rocks or circles of brush or something like that. And it would be a nearly complete circle, almost like the letter C. It would be a nearly complete circle. The walls would come around, and there'd be this small gap where the walls did not touch. And the shepherd would lead his sheep into these pens at nighttime for rest. And when he made sure all of his sheep were there, he's counting them, he's calling them by name, they know his voice, he's tucked them in for the night, he's laid them down. Now it's time for the shepherd to go to sleep. The shepherd then goes and lays down for the night in that gap. He fills in the gap of the wall with his own body, becoming the literal door for the sheep. This was a common practice for shepherds. And that's what Jesus is saying here, I'm the door. And the shepherd laying down in the gap of these primitive pens secured two things. Number one, a sheep cannot wander out and go astray without me being aware of it. It's got to walk over me to do it, and I'm going to protect my sheep. I'm going to keep them safe in here. There's no chance that a sheep would wander. But the second thing the shepherd being the door ensures is no danger can get in. And there's wolves out there. There's predators out there. Do you know a recent survey in like the North American Agricultural Shepherding Survey, which is a real thing, but said that in 1 year, as many as 250,000 sheep die due to predators? 250,000. And the shepherd is laying down in the gap to be the first line of defense. You want to get to my sheep? You got to go through me. If a wolf comes along, it's going to attack me first. I'm the door. Jesus securely places his sheep in safety and securely blocks dangers from his flock. That's the imagery he's using. And what does he say? He says, all who come in will be saved, and they will go out and find pasture. So Jesus reveals another characteristic of the good shepherd. The good shepherd not only guides his sheep, he protects his sheep. He's the door. He's the line of defense. I think Jesus would say to some of us today, why do you keep trying to fight your own battles? Why do you keep going out and trying to fight your own battles? I'm your protector. You worry about your character. You let me take care of your reputation. You don't need to fight your battles. I got you. I'm guiding you, and I'll protect you. But not only that, there's a third characteristic of the good shepherd, which is he guides, he protects, and he provides. All who come in will be saved, and all who go out will find pasture. The shepherd knows how to take care of his sheep. They'll find pasture. I'll lead them. I'll take them to the greenest grass you could imagine, with crystal clear springs to drink and soft beds to lie down in. I will provide for my sheep. And again, the question is, have we been trying to create that for ourselves? Have we been trying to create a life for ourselves and just kind of tack Jesus into it? My American dream, I want to build this whole thing up. And Jesus, it'd be great if you'd be a part of it too. Jesus is saying, I'll provide for you. You don't have to make that happen. I'll provide. Something that should be noted about the enclosure here is it is neither meant to be a fortress or a prison. And here's what I mean by that. And I want to speak to us, believers of Jesus especially, those who would say, man, I believe in Jesus, because sometimes we're really, really bad at treating our relationship with Jesus or this building or the culture of Christianity as a fortress. We've kind of retreated into this thing, and we experience the shepherd's comfort and his love, and it's so good, man. He's our door. He's protecting us. This is awesome. We never have to leave this. And Jesus is like, no. It's not meant to be a fortress. Like, I'm bringing you in for the night, but I'm also bringing you out. I'm still going before you. I'll be your guide and your protector, but we can't stay here forever. In fact, Jesus tells his disciples, I'm sending you out among wolves. Like, part of us believing in Jesus is representing Jesus to this world. We are the light of the world, and we need to go into the world. We can't just retreat and step backwards into this thing and just hope it all passes over, and hopefully one day the nation will be Christian again, and we'll just wait it out and ride out the storm. No! It's not meant to be a fortress where we just hunker down. but it's also not meant to be a prison. I've worked in student ministry now a long time, 14 years. And one of the most common conversations I'll have with a student, they love being here, they're interested in Jesus, they love the experience, but when it comes to the full commitment, are you ready to believe? Are you ready to believe in Jesus, to surrender your life, to allow him to be your shepherd? One of the most common conversations I have is, dude, I just want to have fun though. And I feel like following Jesus won't be fun. Like, I just want to keep doing what I'm doing. I want to keep partying. I want to keep hanging out. I want to keep sinning. I want to keep doing whatever. It's like, man. And then they'll say, yeah, but when I'm older, I'll believe. It's like, wow, you can secure your future? That's crazy. You can guarantee tomorrow? The first person I've ever met. So sometimes following Jesus is almost viewed as a prison where life is limited. It's restricted. I won't have a fun life. Nothing could be further from the truth. Jesus says in verse 10, the thief comes. The agenda of the thief is to kill and steal and destroy. The thief wants to come and he climbs over the back wall and he steals a sheep and he kills the sheep, maybe to eat it or just to devour it. And he destroys, he scatters the flock. If you zoom out into the meta cosmic narrative, Jesus is referring to the great enemy, Satan, whose agenda is to scatter the flock of God's people, to devour and destroy God's people. In this passage, he's honing more in just on the analogy of shepherds and potential threats in the fields and pastures, but there's an agenda of the thieves, and it is to destroy and to kill. The analogy would be, that's what life looks like apart from me. It looks good, but man, it will kill you slowly. On the contrary, Jesus says, my agenda is to give life to the sheep. I have come so that they may have life and have it abundantly, life to the fullest, life to the max, volume dialed up to 10. I mean, I have come so that you can finally experience life. It's not a prison. It's freedom from the prison. You ever have those moments in life you just start evaluating a few things and you just have like these moments of clarity, just in tune and insight. And all of a sudden you kind of evaluate everything and you're like, that's what I thought life was about? That stuff's not important. Or you wind up at these dead ends and you're like, why do I keep going after these things? They leave me so hollow. It doesn't feel good anymore. It's not fun anymore. And then you start to give some of that away. You become generous maybe with your time, your energy, your money. You start to help others and you start to give your time to people. You start to walk with Jesus. You start opening his word and reading and you're, this is amazing, man. And then you look back on the other stuff and you're like, how did I ever think that was life? Ever been there? Jesus says, I've come to give life. Now, verse 11, we get to the claim. I am the good shepherd. He finally says it. It's me. I've been talking about me. I'm the good shepherd. And the shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. This imagery is pointing ahead to his crucifixion, to his sacrifice. I'm the good shepherd, and I'm gonna lay my life down for the sheep. Again, in the context, he's speaking to the Pharisees, none of you have laid your life down for the people of God. In fact, you've separated yourself from the people of God. I've come to give life. How? By giving my own life. He'll use this term 5 times in this passage. I've come to lay my life down because I'm the good shepherd. Whoever's a hired hand and not a shepherd, who does not own the sheep, they see a wolf coming and they leave the sheep and they flee. The wolf snatches them up and scatters them. He flees because he's a hired hand. He cares nothing for the sheep, but I'm the good shepherd. I know my own and my own know me just as the Father knows me and I know the Father. I want to pause there because this is like one of the most impactful verses I think I've ever read. I want us to really marinate in this and get this. I've read this passage I don't know how many times, especially in the past couple weeks preparing for this morning, marinating it. And then last night I was going through it just a few more times and this verse stood out to me like it never has before. Listen to what Jesus is saying. Remember our word for this whole passage, closeness, intimacy, proximity, relationship between a shepherd and his sheep. Listen to what Jesus says. I know my own sheep, and they know me. He describes this relationship. I know my own sheep, and they know me. How does he describe, how does he compare it? Who does he compare it to? The relationship between himself and God the Father. You see that? Verse 15. I know my own, and they know me, just as I know the Father, and he knows me. I want us to get this. Jesus is comparing our level of relationship to him, our intimacy and friendship to him, in the same way that he would view his relationship with the Father. You cannot be known any less by Jesus than he is known by the Father. You guys get this? Jesus is describing a relationship between us and himself, and he's saying we are one. In fact, in John 15, a few chapters later, he would talk about abiding, remaining, being in, and he in us. But right here, he's talking, we are one. I know you just like I know the Father, and he knows me. The relational dynamic Jesus is describing is one of oneness and closeness. I know my sheep, not just by name. I know them deeply and intimately, and I will die for them if I have to, which he does. You cannot be known any less by Jesus than he is known by the Father, and he says he and the Father are one, therefore you and Jesus are one. What an amazing truth. I was hit with that last night. I laid down my life for the sheep. Verse 16, I have other sheep that are not of this fold. I must bring them also. They'll listen to my voice. So there will be one flock, one shepherd. Who's he talking about? He's talking about us. Remember, he's talking to a Jewish audience. But then he mentions, hey, and by the way, I've got this whole other flock I'm going to bring in. He's talking about us, non-Jewish people, Gentiles, and the gospel going to the ends of the earth and inviting, the door is open. Jesus is the door. The door is opening and inviting other sheep into the flock. But it's not two flocks now. It's one flock, one people, one God, one shepherd. Unity is a huge theme in the scriptures. There should be no divisions, no caste system, no elitism, no better than you, nothing like that existing in the family of God. We are one flock. For this reason, the Father loves me, because I lay down my life that I'll take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down, and I've got authority to take it up. This charge I have received from my Father. So now he starts talking about resurrection. I can lay my own life down, and I can take it back. Put the reverse card in the Uno deck. You know what I'm saying? Like, death ain't got me on that. I can do that. It's kind of like, people are like, what? So look at the conclusion. This is how people responded to Jesus. There was again a division among the Jews because of these words. Many said, he's a demon. He's insane. Why would we listen to him? Which is honestly a logical conclusion to come to. C.S. Lewis said there's three main conclusions you can come to about Jesus. He's either a liar, he's a lunatic, or he's Lord. Based on what he said and what he did, there's no other category. We got to put him somewhere. And this crowd decided, yeah, he's a lunatic. He's insane, they say. He's crazy. Because think about the whole flow. Hey, you religious leaders, you can't see. I've come so that those who can't see can see. You can see, but you can't see. What? All right, let me tell you this story. Shepherd has some sheep. He knows them. He knows their names. He leads them out. Okay, what does that have to do with anything? I'm the door. Right. Okay. I lay down my life. Okay. I'm the good shepherd. Oh, okay, that makes a little bit more sense. Makes a little bit more sense. And once I lay down my life, I'm coming back. Okay, then now we're lost again. And by the way, I got other sheep too. Y'all don't even know about this other flock. What? Yeah, I got some sheep too. They're coming in. I don't know what you're saying, man. I'm gonna die. Why? I'm coming back. He's insane. That's their conclusion. You guys feel how odd this conversation is? Remove the familiarity for a second. This is an odd flow. And they came to the, this guy's crazy. What is he, he's demon possessed. But a few people said, verse 21, no, these are not the words of one who's oppressed by a demon. Can a demon open the eyes of a blind? So they go all the way back to John chapter 9. They looked at what he did and what he said. Jesus is our good shepherd. Our good shepherd guides us, protects us, provides for us, and sometimes corrects us. This whole passage is a correction to the Pharisees and their understanding about God. And we need correction too, because sometimes we wander. We need the shepherd to come over. Hey, little lamb, come on. Not that way, this way, back in the flock. He corrects our understanding of who he is and who we are. Sometimes we need to be reminded, we're not the shepherd. We have a shepherd. We just follow him. So if the good shepherd guides and protects and provides and corrects, how do we as sheep respond? Man, have you just felt like you're in that darkness and that storm lately, and you're just kind of feeling lost and hopeless? You're wandering through life like, man, where do I go with this? What do I do with it? Man, when I was in Canada, all I did, I just clung to my guide. I didn't know where I was going, but he did. I didn't feel very safe with the circumstances, but I felt safe with his presence. I just stayed close to him, proximity. I just wanted to see his boots. That was my goal, just see his boots. And as he moves, I move. We'll get out of this. We'll get through this. He'll take care of me. He'll guide me. He'll bring me out. Is Jesus the guide of your life? Because the good shepherd guides us. Is Jesus the protector of your life? Because the good shepherd protects us. Is he your provider? Have you allowed him to be your provider? Or have you decided you're gonna seek greener grass in other pastures? Because Jesus is the provider. And have you allowed him to speak into you some corrections, some things that you need to hear in your own heart and life? And maybe the application for this week is as simple as this. A lyric from a very old song, very simple song, but profound lyric. Jesus, where you lead, I will follow. Maybe this week you just need to say that over and over and over again in your own head, in your own mind. Where you lead, I will follow. Where you lead, I will follow. You're the shepherd, I'm the sheep. Where you lead, I will follow. Will you allow Jesus to be the shepherd of your soul? Let's pray. Jesus, we love you, and we do pray with all of our hearts for you. We need a guide. We need a protector. We need a provider, and we need a corrector beyond ourselves. Jesus, you are the good shepherd, and you offer the best life. And I pray that we as sheep, we as the flock, God's people, would posture ourselves and pray something as simple as, Jesus, where you lead, we will follow. We trust you. We trust you. We love you. Let us be close to you, Jesus. We ask all this in your name. Amen.